Last week we saw again the reminder to keep those different statutes, the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the redeeming of the firstborn, all those things that God told Moses to share with the people, things that they were supposed to do to remember, specifically to remember what God had done. That was basically what those were for. That's the reason they celebrated the Passover, was to remember what God did and how he provided. That's the reason why they do those things, was to remember. And it's explained there in chapter 13 as we went through that. Then we saw them on their journey. God provided a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to guide and direct them which direction they should go. We started into chapter 14 last week and saw that God had told Moses to lead the people toward the Red Sea. Well, we talked about this. When you're out in the open and somebody's chasing you, you got all sorts of directions to go, right? But if one section or direction is blocked off and you can't go that way, it kind of limits your escape routes, if you will, right? It limits the possibilities where you can go. And basically, they had backed up right to the Red Sea. So they were basically trapped. And I think Doug mentioned last week that there were mountains in that area too. I didn't see that. But at any rate, God had put them there. Verse 3, we talked about this just a little bit. It said, "For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in." We know that obviously somehow Pharaoh was keeping track of the people and where they were going and what they were doing. So he was giving reports back. But God says, this is what Pharaoh is going to say. Verse 4, "And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh," or gain honor over Pharaoh, "and upon his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And they did so. And it was told the king, so this is what God tells Moses is going to happen. Verse 5, "And it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled." So this is kind of way you're reading. It seems like we're backing up a little bit, but really the first few verses there are what's going to happen. Obviously, the land of Egypt was in mourning, right? Because their firstborn had just died, right? Of their families, humans, and livestock as well. So there was obviously a lot of things going on. And at some point, verse 5, it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants turned against the people, and they said, and God said, "I'm going to harden their hearts." And they said, "Why have we done this, that we have let the Israel go from serving us?" So apparently, their mourning didn't take very long. It wasn't like they spent weeks, we don't consider. All of a sudden, they realized there was what? Yeah, we got to do all the work ourselves. Basically, with the Israelites leaving, that was a large financial drain on Egypt and on the system, because that was their servants. And not to mention, not only that, did it shut off? No, maybe it's still there. Not only that, not only were they going to have to do all the work now, or it wasn't going to get done, but there was a large income from having them there, because they prospered, right? God prospered them while they were there. So all of a sudden, dollar signs start flashing in their eyes. Whoa, 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 whoa. What did we do telling those people they could go, on top of the fact that we just gave away all our money and jewelry, remember? God says, go ask them and they'll give it to you. And all of a sudden, it hit them what went on. So they said, what in the world have we done? Why have we done this, that we let them go from what? Not that we let them go to go worship, but we let them go from serving us. There was their, you know, all of a sudden, I don't have, you know, all these people to serve us, so I got to do all the work myself.
It's crazy how they think more about that than the fact of what they just lost because of it.
Right. And again, Right. Why all of a sudden, when you saw what just took place and just went through all that, now all of a sudden, you know, you're concerned about now you got to do the work, or now there's a financial drain on the system. But we see where their hearts were, and obviously God was directing them that way. And he made, this is Pharaoh, and he made ready his chariots and took people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. So it's a well-known fact that the Egyptians through, it's another peoples called the Hyksos, H-Y-K-S-O-S, who actually invented the chariot, but the Egyptians adopted that, and that was a major difference in warfare as far as the use of chariots. It was like the tank of the day. You know, all of a sudden they've got chariots which are pulled by two horses. One guy's driving the chariot, and then there's a warrior that rides along with them. That's how they did it, and that was had a great impact on the wars of the day. So Pharaoh packs up his 600, it says he took 600 chosen chariots, so this is going to be his elite force of chariot drivers and warriors. And it also says, and took people with him, so obviously there's got to be some kind of, you don't take 600 or actually 1,200 people and 1,200 horses and 600 chariots without some kind of supply chain, right? And you can't just send them people out in the wilderness and expect them to survive. So you have to, so he took his people with him and took his people with him. Maybe it was Pharaoh's entourage. I don't know. Maybe it was people to take care of Pharaoh. But still, he's got a supply for that army. And it says, and all the chariots of Egypt. So obviously there are other chariots in other places, and he gathered them all. Probably the first 600 is like his special forces, his elite fighting warriors. But he drew from the whole land of Egypt and took them all. And all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them, verse 7. Verse 8, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. God had told Moses just a few verses before, this is what I'm going to do. I've still got something to teach the people of Egypt, right? Because it says back here, verse 4, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. I am Jehovah. I am the one true God. They still had something to learn, apparently, because God still has a lesson for them. Bonnie. Right.
But if they had enough to do over 600 chariots, they still had a lot of livestock left.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just never really think of that as you're going through the plague. You think that's
right.
Gone.
Right. I mean, you're right. Egypt was hurting. There's no doubt about that. But it's not like they were. Yeah. Go ahead, Judson. Justin. Yeah.
Now it's the Egyptian military. It's not only really spiritually had their warfare, now they have their physical warfare. And when they mentioned the mountains, now some of the chariots are great on flat land.
Right.
You put a mountain in front of them, it's like they can't go up the mountain.
Right. Right. They got certain places they can go. So, God hardened Pharaoh's heart, verse 8, like he said he would. And the king of Egypt, Pharaoh, and he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with a high hand, or other words, where am I at here? went out with a high, went out in a great way there. But the Egyptians pursued them, so he changed their hearts. They went after him. Verse 9, the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and camped by the sea besides Pihahiroth before Baal Zephon. So they come upon the encampment. We're not given a time frame here, but they come upon the encampment, and verse 10 says, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. So they see this circumstance coming. Here comes Pharaoh and all these chariots, the armies chasing after them, and obviously they're concerned. They're afraid. They don't know what Pharaoh's going to do, but if you stop and think about it, Pharaoh doesn't want to destroy them all. He just wants to what? He just wants to take them back, right? That's what's in Pharaoh's heart. And it says here in the end of that verse, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Good for them. What should you do when you see a circumstance where you are concerned about or even afraid? You should cry out to the Lord, right? And look for his answers, look for his solution to the problem. That's good. They did good. Until you read the next verse. What's the next verse say? And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Well, I'll read the next verse and then we'll go back. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Didn't take them too long, and all of a sudden they are complaining to Moses, saying, the first verse, there were no graves in Egypt. In other words, we didn't all die off in Egypt, but you brought us out here so we could be slain and die out here in the wilderness. Yeah. Yep, it seems like that was the very next thing out of their mouth. Or, I mean, it might have been a short period of time. We don't know. And then they say, what? Verse 12. We told you so, right? That's what they're saying. We told you so. Leave us alone. Leave the situation alone. We'd be better off that we were still enslaved in Egypt than we die out here. Well, did they forget the enslavement and the fact that they cried and God heard their voices while they were in Egypt? But they forgot about that. It's interesting that they cried out unto the Lord, and it didn't take very long. The next verse, we don't, again, time-wise, we don't know how long it is. But then all of a sudden, they go to Moses and start complaining. Why is that? Pardon me, what? Okay, human nature, there's one. There you go. I think it's because they didn't see God work fast enough. Oh God, we're in a situation. They're coming after us. Do something right now. I don't see anything happening. Come on. Okay, God's not going to do anything. We got to go run to Moses and complain. Huh? That doubt thing again, yep. And we say, man, they didn't do very good. Is there ever times when you wish God would work a little faster than he does? Do we get impatient sometimes with God's hand and his ways? Yep, we sure do. And sometimes we tend to complain because things don't happen in a time frame that we think they should. The other half of the situation here is obviously not a lot of time had passed since they just witnessed all the plagues of Egypt and how miraculous God had worked on their behalf, how things had worked in Egypt and hadn't affected them, how the firstborn had died in the land of Egypt and God had protected them. Apparently, their memory was a lot shorter than ours, right? Because we always remember. Well, wait a minute. We do that too, don't we? God brings us through a situation and all of a sudden we just lose it all. We forget, right? We want to run and hide because God can't provide this time, although he just provided last time. Do you wonder why God's instructions were to the people to remember those things? Because we often tend to forget what God has done, right? And yet we see it here as well. Lessons for us also. So, wouldn't it be better that we were still slaves in Egypt than dying out here in the wilderness? And Moses said unto the people, fear not, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. So Moses says to the people, well, one more verse. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. In other words, I'll make sure my phone's turned off. In other words, what? God's going to take care of you, and you need to basically zip your lips, shut your mouth, stop complaining. Is basically what it's telling them. Hold your peace. You have nothing to say. God is going to fight for you, and you're going to see him take care of you. I heard a phrase, a statement, whatever, this week. And it goes like this. Do we interpret our circumstances through God's character, or do we interpret God's character through our circumstances? In other words, do we look at our circumstances through God's faithfulness, through his love, his care, his concern for us? Is that how we look at circumstances? Through the fact that God has provided before and he's going to provide again? Or do we look at God's character through our circumstances? Look what I have to go through. God must not love me. God must not be caring for me. I don't see him right now. Which means God isn't a loving God. See the difference? One, your focus is upon God and knowing him and his character and being able to face those circumstances. The other is looking at the circumstance and saying, God can't work this out. God can't provide. And that's exactly what they did. Even though they had just been through all the plagues of Egypt and the miracles that God had performed, they said, whoa, circumstances that God can't handle. Instead of taking a look at them and saying, God brought us through all this. What's a few chariots to God? So Moses has to tell them, God's going to fight for you. You don't even have to do anything, right? He says, fear not, stand still. All you got to do is watch, and God will do the work. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. We're going to keep them moving. You don't need to cry unto me. But lift up thy rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel, again, this is the Lord telling Moses what's going to take place. And Israel shall go on dry ground to the midst of the sea. And behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they will follow them, and I will get me honor or honor over Pharaoh and all of the hosts upon his chariots and upon his horsemen, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. Again, apparently, the Egyptians still had something to learn because God's still teaching them that he is God. He is the Lord. When I have gotten me honor upon or over Pharaoh, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. So God tells Moses what's going to take place. You're going to part the, well, I'm going to part the Red Sea. Once you hold your staff over it, your rod, and they're going to go through on dry ground. And I'm going to get, I'm going to take care of the Egyptians. Verse 19, and the angel of God, which went before the camp, interesting, we thought it was just a pillar of fire and a pillar of cloud, right? But apparently the angel of God there was there as well. The angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. God provided. He went behind them instead of leading them. Now he was behind them, protecting them. And again, we talked about the confidence that they should have had seeing God's presence there while they were in the wilderness. From before their face and stood behind them, and it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all the night. So basically, darkness on the Egyptian side, light on Israelite side, so that the Egyptians couldn't proceed. They had to stop there. And Moses stretched out his hand, his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Again, I think you shared last Sunday about the parting of the river, crossing the Jordan River. Same type of circumstance here, except it's not flowing water from one side, but it's basically spreading that water. And then the fact that that water had been laying there for how long? Probably a long time. How long does it take the ground to dry up after being saturated for that period of time? A long time. Right. So God obviously performs this miracle, and so you've got the parting of the Red Sea and them crossing through on dry. I heard the buzzer, and I don't know if we're going to get through the whole thing. We might have to finish up next week. But anyhow, God parts the sea for them to pass through on dry land, which is basically two miracles, if you will, that they could pass through there. and form that wall of water on their left and on their right. Now, it says he used a strong east wind. Can a strong east wind push water two directions? Probably not, but God, you know, some people say, well, see, it was a natural phenomenon, some kind of freak phenomenon because it was a strong east wind. Sorry, no. He might have used that, but it still was a miracle. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, which is like 6 o'clock in the morning, the Lord looked out unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud. That's kind of interesting statement there, isn't it? The angel of the Lord was there, and he looked through the pillar of cloud, because he could see through it. Maybe he's got a little view through that cloud, but he saw the Egyptians, and he troubled the host of the Egyptians and took off their wheels and drove them, or that they drove them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them and against the Egyptians. So what's happened is Israel has passed into the Red Sea and up through the Red Sea. The pillar of fire and cloud is behind them, but the chariots are following. So they're moving as fast as they can, but God is protecting the rear of the Israelites. So the Egyptians cannot proceed any faster than God allows them to. Allows them to get through. Remember, They could see on one side, darkness on the other. They could see to get through the Red Sea. About the morning, so it must have been all night long that they passed through, about the morning, God says, you know what? You're going to be stuck here because I'm going to what? I'm going to kick the wheels off your wagons. Basically what it did, right? It says, and he took off their chariot wheels. That they drove them heavily. So as the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them. Even the Egyptian army understood that God was the one that was doing this. Not only was he protecting the Israelites, but he was causing them to, I mean, what's the chances that all the wheels fall off, or even one, all it's got to be is one on each chariot. What are the chances that one wheel falls off every chariot? Ever have a wheel fall off your car? I've had a wheel fall off my trailer. Well, I actually fell off my truck one time too. But not all four of them. That sounds like a Flintstone comic, right? Boom! All of a sudden the tires fall off. But that's what God did. And yeah, all of them. And they understood that the chances of that were impossible. But God had provided, even for them. Go ahead.
I was saying, when all the Israelites left Egypt, it's like, the owner, how many of them were working on the chariots? And when they left, it's like, okay, how do we get the chariots?
Yeah. Verse 26, and the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thy hand over the sea. So obviously they were on the far side, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians and upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength when the morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians. They tried to run but couldn't get away, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the hosts of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained so much, not so much as one. Not one horse, not one man. Obviously, it was deep in the sea. It wasn't, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 feet. I mean, if you were someplace and got flooded, you could possibly swim. Somebody probably could, right? Up 10, 12, 15 feet. It had to have been a lot of water that God pushed back in that sea at that crossing. And God provided, and yet he destroyed the Egyptians. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the sea. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. That's good. Too bad that it took them seeing that to believe again, and then they're going to fail later on. It's a lesson to us. God provides for us in many ways, right? At many times, but we need to remember what God has done for us and not to complain when we don't see things working out the way they should, or when we come across circumstances that we're concerned about. We just need to what? Trust in the Lord. Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.